First of all, we start with the metta meditation. Metta means loving kindness. Okay.
This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest things that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to this views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
Okay, so we have this right now. So we have two people who haven't meditated before, so I usually, when that occurs, I usually give a little idea of how to meditate or what we do when we meditate. So there are many things to remember. One is what we call mindfulness, which is used an awful lot. It means present moment attention. Attention to the present moment and what you're doing in it and what you intend to do in it. It comes from a Pali word that is sati. That means present moment awareness, and it's connected to memory. And the reason it's connected to memory is that when you have present moment awareness and something is going on, you'll remember it. That's the connection. And if you've ever, if there are certain memories you've had when something has happened in the past, and unfortunately I only think of disasters like the tsunami or when Kennedy was assassinated, I'll never forget where I was, who I was with. I can go back to that place, and that's an example of present moment awareness, because you're shocked into having this awareness right there and then, and you can remember everything that's going on. And I'm sure you've had this experience yourselves. That's an experience of what we're talking about. So we want to cultivate this mindfulness or this present moment awareness. Attention in the present moment, awareness of the present moment and what is going on. So it's very important in our meditation, and what we're doing is we're watching the meditation object in this case is the breath. It wouldn't have to be the breath, there's many kinds of meditation, but the type that we usually do, and the only type that I intend to teach, except possibly loving kindness meditation, is and it was the favor of the Buddha, mindfulness of the breath. And what we're doing is we're not doing any kind of, if anybody has had yoga or done yoga breathing, we're not doing that. we're not doing any kind of breathing that is controlled. We're just watching the breath without attempting to do anything. In fact, what we want to do is let the doer that we think we are, we want to let that just fade away if we can. I mean, that's our attempt anyway. Let the doer go and just let the body knows how to breathe, so just watch it. All we're doing is watching it as a meditation object. We're not doing anything with it other than that. So, and I like to say, it's what our ultimate goal is, a deep, and don't worry if you don't get into this right away. This is for the future, but the ultimate goal of the meditation is to go into a deep stillness meditation, a very deep, deep stillness meditation in which you have insight. Now, to get there, you go through some steps, and the two main ones are, you have to start with sati. So that's where we are now. We start with mindfulness of the breath. And we don't have to go beyond that, but just to give you an idea, you go through that and you see what's going on in the world around you with the body, in particular what's happening, and you may get an inspiration, and you may reach this point of having some tingling or a kind of joy. You feel a mental joy. And you get a feeling of maybe a rushing of tingling. Now, don't worry if you don't have this, but it may happen. You may even at that point see some light in your mind. You may see a light, just a blob of light, nothing in particular. That's fine. Just if that happens, or if this joy happens, you can shift your meditation object. You can shift the attention to that, to the light or to the joy. Yeah, but in most cases, you'll be focusing on the breath itself. So don't worry if you don't get beyond that. It takes a long time to make these steps, and it takes a lot of dedicated practice. And like I always use the simile, and probably everybody else does, it's like a kid learning to play the violin. You know, if this child doesn't play every day... and make all the mistakes that are possible to make many times, the child will never learn to play the violin. You know that. I mean, you don't expect the child to know the violin after a couple of days. So in the same way, you need to determine a time period and put yourself into it, and hopefully, I encourage everybody to practice at home as much as you can. The morning is a good time, but people ask me, sometimes they ask how long and when, and it's up to you whenever you have time. If it's only 5 minutes, then it's better to meditate than not meditate, but I would say, you know, like a half hour to begin with, like we're doing a half hour today. If you can make it longer than that and work up to an hour, that's great. And if you could do 2 hours in a day, one in the morning, one in the evening, that would be a good practice. However, I'm setting out everything that I can think of for people who haven't meditated, and I haven't really got into the meditation now. All I can say is right now is to close your eyes and just take a breath. Just breathe. I mean, you're breathing anyway. Just watch your breath, not take a breath, but don't take a breath like in that sense. But just watch your breathing, just normal breathing. And as you watch it, as you focus on it, you'll notice different qualities of this breath. You can notice how long it is, whether it's a long or a short breath. Your pace may pick up. You may start out doing a rather fast breath, fast breathing, and then your breathing may slow down. It may also be shallow, a shallow breath, or a deeper breath. And if you feel your body needs to take a deep breath, go ahead and take a deep breath. Just go along with the body and let the body breathe in a natural way. Just relax and breathe in a natural way. And also you want to start out, you want to relax your body. If you need to stretch or something and get into a comfortable position, go ahead and do it. Don't feel shy about that. Go ahead and get into a comfortable position. Try to keep your back as vertical, straight up and down as you can. And that's whether you're sitting on the floor or whether you're sitting in a chair. And you want to keep your head balanced right over your body and not projecting forwards like this, because it's hard on the neck and it also causes problems with the lower part of the spine where it tucks in. And you want to keep that lower, I think it's called the lordosis. So you want to keep that kind of pushed forward a little bit, and you can use a cushion at home if you don't have one here to do that if it's comfortable. And keep straight up. You'll find that if you project your neck forward, not only do you get pain, but then you'll start getting sleepy and then you'll start drifting off like that. That's very typical. So that's something to notice while you're meditating and to readjust. You can come back to your body and readjust. And when you start out, you can go through the body quickly and just notice points of tension and just let all the tension out. Do a body scan. You can do a body scan like a horizontal plane going through the head, just going down and pushing all the tension out very slowly and pushing out from your face and your neck, shoulders, and going down. I may go through this again right at the beginning, going down and the torso and then the lower legs and pushing all the tension out of the soles of the feet. And if you find you need to do that during the meditation, that's fine. Go ahead. Anything to reestablish a relaxed feeling, or a very relaxed feeling, and do whatever you can to get into a relaxed position, but still keeping your posture erect. So when you pay attention to your breath, what will happen? I'll tell you what will happen. Unless you're a prodigy, you will have lots of thoughts coming into your mind. Lots and lots of thinking. All of a sudden you'll be thinking about the past, the future, what you want to do next, or why you're bored in this class, and why you think you should be somewhere else, or what the children are doing, what your husband or wife is doing, or an argument you had at work with a boss, or what you're going to be doing the next day. And start out, it's like two bags you have. One is the past and one is the future. So you're holding them in your arms and they're weighing you down. So just drop one and then the other. Let go of the past and future and stay right in the present. And you can only breathe in the present. So stay with the present breath, right in the present, and it's like you're riding it, like you're surfing over this breath as it's going through the ocean. The breathing, of course, is one breath after another, but it's going through the, as if it's moving through time, and you stay with it. And the thoughts, all I can say is, when the thoughts come, recognize them and let them go. Put them down. Return to the breath. And you do this over and over again. You need to build up your strength and in meditation, in mindfulness, in focusing on the breath. So you come back. Every time you get drawn away by something, whether it's a sound, a pain in your knee, any sensory kind of impingement, then just drop it. Notice it and drop it. If there is a serious pain, then you'll have to adjust your body in some way. The rule is, generally, if you can, this is for people usually who are sitting on a cushion on the floor, but if you have a pain somewhere in your leg, and you've had it a while, but if you know you can get up, because you've done this before, you can get up and walk, then try to overcome the pain with your mind and just let it go and just return to your breathing. However, if you get up and limp, that's not a good sign. If you get up and limp and you can't walk right, then you must alter your posture and change your position somehow. And you may need bolsters under your knee if you're sitting on the floor or something. But don't try to tackle the full lotus position if you're not used to it, I would say, in general. If you're a person who's done a lot of yoga and can do it okay, but we had a person in here a couple times ago when I was here who actually was doing the full lotus position. It really surprised me, and I told her to be careful of her knees. I mean, I don't know different people's experience, so I have to say, watch out. Don't get into the full lotus position unless you really know what you're doing. And a half lotus is a lot easier, if you know what I'm talking about. But any position that can keep you stable and erect and reasonably relaxed in your body. Now, on the thoughts, coming back to the thoughts will keep coming back. So, as I say, that's all right. That's normal. That's absolutely normal. And your practice, why it's called a practice, is that you have to keep practicing coming back to your breath. You have to practice it. You keep coming back, and you build up a kind of strength that way in your mind. And it gets stronger, and you get more used to it. So, don't worry if you're not. And as we go through the meditation, I'll be making remarks because I understand people like to have some coaching, and so I will say, come back. You know, if you're drifting into thinking or scenarios and things, come back to just notice them and come back to your breathing. So I'll help you on that score a little bit. So. Are there any questions? Because I would like to start the meditation. It's a little early, but rather than spend a half hour talking, because I think what I want to talk about is going to take a little longer anyway, so then we can stop at 5. Okay, we can have the lights out. Okay, everybody reestablish their relaxation. And you can close your eyes and continue watching your breathing. Watch your breathing in and out. If any tension comes into your shoulders or neck or face, people forget the face, but relax that. Come back to it. Come back to that tension and let it go. Watch the breath as it goes in and out. Notice the pause after you exhale. And after you inhale, you can see which one is longer, which one is shorter. Which pause, I mean, is longer or shorter. Other things you may notice the feeling of the exhale coming from your nose and striking your upper lip. You may notice that, although it's not so easy, but as you become quieter and quieter, the stillness may allow you to feel that breath. And some people actually use that as a meditation object. But the way we practice, the way we learn at Bodhinyana, the monastery, is not to go to any particular place in the body. It's not a meditation on the nose or the stomach. It's just on the breath, the process of the breathing as it goes in and out. Don't do the breath, let the breath just happen. Let the body do it. Let go of any control. Now, in this beginning, because some people have beginner's luck, and they'll actually feel a little peace, what you do as you're doing this, as you're breathing in and out, if you notice any desire, a kind of unconscious desire, you may, as you get still, more and more still, you may notice a desire. And I want you to, if you want to do this exercise, I recommend it because it has something to do with what I'm going to be talking about. Let go of that desire. Drop the desire. Just let it go. Don't push it away. It's not a thing where you're gritting your teeth and getting rid of the desire. You're just letting it fade away. No desire. You're stepping back from the breath. Neutral. Neutral. Whatever happens, you're just letting it happen. You're letting the inhale and exhale come and go. And no desire. If you start tensing up some part of your body, like holding your jaw, your teeth clenched, notice that. You may be doing something like that unconsciously. So if there's any tension, like in your hands, let it go. Let your feet just lay there without flexing them, without doing anything with them or any other part of your body. And return to breathing, desireless breathing. No control. Don't control anything. Let the breathing happen. Do this, you may feel a certain kind of pleasure. And as long as you drop the desire, anytime it comes up, you can continue to feel this pleasure. It's just a little pleasure. again, if any kind of tension crops up in your body, shoulders, drop it, let it go. Let it go until your body is like liquid. Just no tension, no solidity, just fluid. Continue focusing on the breathing. If you begin to think about things, if thoughts have started flowing through your mind, just drop them. Well, see them and let them go. Whatever comes, let it come. Whatever goes, let it go. Don't try to push it away. No feeling of dislike or rejection. Just let it go. Just let it pass away like clouds passing overhead. And return to your breathing without desire. And return, if you've had this pleasure, feeling of pleasure, let it return and continue. Feeling of peace. If thoughts come into your mind, that it will cause tension to come up in some part of the body. And vice versa, if you start having tension in some part, the shoulders, the face, and the legs, then that may start up thoughts coming through your mind. So drop both of them. Relax in the body, relax in the mind. Let the thoughts go, return to the breathing. Put away any desire that you might notice. If your mind is constantly slipping away into thoughts, remember, this breath is your life. Have valuation for the breath. This beautiful breath brings in an energy. Not just gases, some other kind of energy that brings life into you. Evaluation for the breath. You can always think later about things. If you have an itch, a tickle on your nose, see if you can just see it and then pull your focus back to your breath and ignore the tickle and see what happens. If it really is driving you crazy and is very distracting, then do what you have to do. Itch it. Scratch it, I mean. You can continue this exercise I suggested as long as you wish, or you can focus on other qualities that you see in the breath, how long they are, how short, has the pace of breathing sped up or slowed down, whether you feel something on your upper lip, the breath on your upper lip. But you stay with the breath. Or stay with the breathing without desire. If you hear sounds, just let them come and go like clouds. Just let the sounds just come in and go out. return to the breathing. If you're drifting into thinking, come back to the breath. Return to the in and out of simple, ordinary breath. Just breathe. Just let your body breathe and watch. Just stand aside and watch the breathing go on. Feels drowsy, feel free to stand up. That's one of the positions of meditation, standing. Just stand quietly. And then when you're ready, you can sit back down. Now, in the last moment of our meditation, if you wish, you can cultivate right thought and its loving kindness. Part of one third of right thought is metta or loving kindness, and you can think to yourself, may I be happy and may all beings be happy. And you can repeat that with your breath if you can. May I be happy. May all beings be happy. Right thought. May I be happy. May all beings be happy. Now the time has come to end our meditation, and the lights will soon go on. And just carefully open your eyes and adjust your vision to the light. Hanging on to the peace you may feel. The lights take a while to warm up. And so, as we're waiting here for the lights to come on, you may think of, through your mind, maybe some question came up during the meditation having to do with the meditation. And this would be a good time when you're all ready to start talking and come back to the usual everyday world to ask that question. It's important if you have some kind of questions about a problem in the meditation or some reaction to anything that went on during the meditation, speak up and we'll hand the mic over.
Anybody got a question?
Yeah, Bob.
I don't really think I need this, but anyway.
Hold it up.
I find, when I say with breath meditation, that if I try and focus on the breath, I change it. So I try very hard to stay with metta. I find that if I look at the breath, I change it.
Well, that's all right. Nobody said that you couldn't change it. It happens. It's not something you plan to do, is it? It's just something that happens naturally. Mm-hmm. Well, that's just something to watch. That's all right. That's what we're looking at. We're looking at how. Can everybody hear me? We're looking at how the breath works, and that's part of it. That's an example I never would have thought of. And that's an example of something to watch in the breath, not get rid of. We want to see, this is a laboratory, and we want to see how our body-mind works. This is one of the reasons. You know, it's not like we have just one goal. It takes a long time to get to deep samadhi. And on the way, we have to find out how the body-mind works. And this is one good example of something that's going on. All right?
Yep.
And so, just follow that. Just watch it without commenting on it, without rejecting it. Sounds like you might have had a little rejection to it.
Yeah.
Thinking, oh, this is wrong. Well, it's not wrong. It's just phenomena. A phenomenon. And it's good to see it. Don't reject it. Don't grasp it. Stay neutral and see what happens. And see if it subsides in a while. Maybe it will strengthen. Or maybe it will subside. I don't know. You know, it's your mind, and it may be only. Does that happen all the time?
Pretty much.
Is that what you, okay?
It's a breath meditation thing for me. Whenever I do breath meditation, I look at it and I find that I'm changing it.
Oh, you start controlling.
Yeah.
Ah, well, what you're seeing is very important. You're seeing the controller.
Yeah.
Yes, well, if you didn't do the meditation, you may never see the controller like that, in that way. The doer, the controller.
Yeah.
You may never see it, and that's essential to see. That is something that's essential to see, because it's something that we have to learn to let go of.
Okay.
To go farther in meditation, we have to let go of the controller. You can hear Ajahn Brahm talking about this all the time.
Yeah.
We let go of the doer. We let go of control, of controlling things. That's our nature. And if you apply that to the breathing meditation, you'll keep going in circles. You have to let go of the control.
Okay. Anybody other
questions?
I hope so,
because if there are any impediments in your breathing meditation, it's good to find out. Don't be shy. Just if something has come up, if you had a reaction to the little exercise that I suggested, you can tell me about it, because we'll be talking a little more about it. Yes.
How do you mean let go of it?
how do I mean let go of it?
Let go of grasping? A feeling of desire, you mean?
The controller.
Oh, how do you let go of the controller?
Yeah.
Yes, well, that's the big question. That is the big question.
And if I knew how to say it, I would probably be the greatest meditation teacher in the world.
Did you have something?
Did you? I thought you were going
to
say.
No, I'm just trying to get an answer to it.
Oh, well, I wish I had a good answer. I'd say the only way that I can think of is that you persist in your practice and you have the intention to let go, and you see that you're not letting go, and you keep on meditating. And you just persist, and it won't be something that's just going to go like that, you know. It's
I always find in my breathing, I always go into a deep breathing.
You mean you automatically go to deep breathing?
Yeah.
Yes, well, that sounds a little bit like what Bob was saying. So when you see that, stop doing the deep breathing and return to just a normal everyday breath. All I can say is you have to persist. Be persistent. It's like the kid playing the violin who keeps playing the wrong chord or something. Well, you can't just stop because you're playing the wrong chord. You have to keep practicing. And if you get mad at yourself, then you can see that and take a walk around the block and come back and meditate some more. You know, it's don't get involved with beating yourself up about things, with rejecting or feelings of dislike and that sort of thing. Just stay calm and neutral, calm, relaxed, peaceful. And as I said, I can't say exactly how you let go of something, but it can be done. And when you do that, you'll find peace.
Like, I'm okay with it. It don't bother me. It's not, probably not deep breathing, but deeper breathing.
Well, maybe it's just a normal way your body wants to breathe. No, let it go.
Everything calms down.
All right. Well, just accept that and just continue watching.
Yeah.
And that's okay. Yes, Pinda? No.
Yeah,
it's like. It's like an auction. I thought you were signaling.
No, I'll wait. Because I think what Bob means is when you're not into the breath, it's there, it sort of carries on, you're not conscious of it. But as soon as you say, okay, I'm now, or when you start thinking of the breath,
you're conscious of it, and then, as you say, you try to control that.
Yes.
But as
can happen.
Sir John Brown says, the introductory, he says, when you're breathing in, you say, please, let go. So, and then, after a few minutes, you'll see that your attention goes away from that when you sort of, if you say peace, when you breathe in and let go, when you breathe out. Or as Bhante Sujata sometimes say, you can even say breathing in, breathing out, and then
you can try that.
Yeah, yeah.
You can try that, although generally it's better to stay away from verbalizing, but mm-hmm. You can try that
in the beginning, maybe.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. And then after
it's something you can try. There are all sorts of experiments that you can perform because it's your laboratory and you need to learn to what's going on. Okay? I guess I'll better start. Okay, is it okay? Everybody hear me okay? Okay. I have to refer to my notes. Now, last time I was here, a lady mentioned that she had seen something in her breathing. She saw that there was pleasure, because I had mentioned you may have pleasure in your breathing, but then she noticed that she started having a little bit of displeasure. And it struck me, oh, that's the secret. That is so important, because this is the alternation that takes place in our life. And I mentioned that my preceptor, Bhante Gunaratana, wrote a paper about this very thing, The Secret of Breathing, which was I found and was published a couple, 3 years ago in the Buddhist Publication Society. It was in their newsletter. It's not a long paper, but I wanted to try to present the paper without reading it, and some parts are very repetitious, so if I tend to repeat, it's going to happen maybe, and these parts are important to know about. So this is about the truth that is hidden in breathing. When we do breath meditation, we're usually on the surface, and we may notice, as I said today, you may notice how long the breath is, or how deep it is, that kind of thing. Or you may notice even how long the pauses are, whether one is long and one is short. You may notice things like the temperature of your breath coming from your nose, whether when you exhale it's one temperature and when you inhale it's a different temperature, that kind of thing. But there are certain secrets hidden within the breath, and it takes attention. And the Buddha said that phenomena does not exist until you pay attention to it. So, now, attention reveals these hidden secrets in the breath. And going farther than that, we are not talking about conceptual knowledge, which is the kind of knowledge you get from a book or a lecture or talking to people, which is intellectual, conceptual knowledge. What we're doing, the reason we're meditating, is that by meditating, we concentrate, we focus on things, and we see them over and over again, and thereby we get a deep understanding. It's only by experiencing things like this, and it can be done in other ways besides meditation, but it's only by experiencing things in this way that we get the kind of understanding that will allow us to make progress on the path to liberation, to awakening. Conceptual knowledge can only take us a little way. It can take us a little way, and study can take us a ways. But it's the deep understanding that happens within that takes us the whole way into deep meditation, where we get the deepest understanding and insight. So that's in the future, way in the future. Okay, so I don't think I'm going to be able to present the whole thing. However, what we want to see, when we breathe in and out, And we, when we breathe in, if we hold our breath a minute and don't breathe in, and then we breathe in, we'll feel a subtle kind of satisfaction, right? You can try that. I mean, everybody probably knows that. You'll feel pleasure. You've been holding your breath, and then you breathe in, you'll feel a kind of pleasure. But then if you hold it again, if you hold that breath, it will turn into a kind of pressure in the lungs, and it will become difficult to hold, and it will become displeasure. So you see, obviously there's an alternation here that goes on all the time in every breath. There's an alternation that we don't usually notice because we're breathing mechanically, or even if we're watching our breath, we're letting it go without involving ourselves with controlling it. And we don't notice because we let the body do it. We don't notice particularly a great satisfaction or dissatisfaction because the body is operating the way it wants to. However, the anxiety that we feel, the discomfort that we feel in the pressure in the lungs comes from a certain thing, and that's desire. Now, this is linked with that exercise that I mentioned, and the reason I said that you try to drop the desire, is that through every cell in our body, there is this desire, and it's a desire to live. And without oxygen, the cells can't live, of course. You know that. You know that the body has to keep bringing oxygen in and having it replaced by the cells with carbon dioxide and so forth, the waste gases, and which is taken back to the lungs, and the lungs fill with the air, as you all know this from grade school, I'm sure, and then you have to expel it. And the brain sends signals, the lung sends signals to the brain sends signals to the lungs and to the diaphragm and all the muscles that control breathing as to what to do. So there's this communication back and forth. But the anxiety, the important part of this is to see that the anxiety, what is it caused by? I said, it's caused by desire. The anxiety that we feel, the discomfort we feel, when we either don't breathe in fast enough or we don't exhale fast enough, it comes from desire. And it comes from the desire to live in this case. The cells are saying, I need more air, I need more oxygen. They're not saying this, but you can imagine in an animation cartoon, you can imagine the cells are screaming, I need air, breathe, I need more air, and they're sending impulses through nerves. It's not just the mind that's doing this. The whole body, our whole mind and body is connected with this, and we feel this strong desire to live, and that's communicated into things like the satisfaction first and then the dissatisfaction. Okay? I hope that's clear to everybody. Now, so the agitation in the cells is communicated to the brain, and then the brain communicates to the lungs. Now, desire starts at the very beginning of our life. In fact, the Buddha says that the entry, coming into existence is suffering. That's a quote from the Buddha. Coming into existence is suffering. And you can see that a baby has a very strong desire, although it has no intellectual knowledge of what's going on. It has desire, and it expresses the desire through crying and screaming. Everybody knows that, and it shows what a strong desire there is in this little baby. Now, the breathing is controlled and dependent on this desire, which, as I said, we usually don't notice. It's usually unconscious and subtle. Now, so this anxiety or suffering is there, whether it's conscious or unconscious. That anxiety is in us. It can be in us if given the right occasion, and that's preventing the breath from going as it will. I'm sure that's elementary to everybody. Okay, now there are different levels of suffering, and okay, if we have a great urge to breathe in, then when we breathe in, we'll have this subtle pleasure, as I mentioned, and that subtle pleasure will be proportionate to the anxiety that we felt before we breathed in. And we know, as I said, that the breath after a short time, if we hold it, it's going to change from a pleasurable feeling to an unpleasurable feeling. Dissatisfaction, we'll feel that. Okay, I think that's clear. So the breath that first caused pleasure now causes, after a time, causes displeasure or an unpleasant pressure in the lungs. And this is suffering. This is what the Buddhists mean when this is one aspect of suffering, this unpleasant feeling, unsatisfactoriness. So what we're seeing is that connected to our desire is a little bit of suffering. Whenever we have any pleasure that comes from desire, it's accompanied by a little bit of suffering. This is one of the truths of that we find out. When we watch the breath over and over, we'll see these deeper truths, which may sound very simple. As I said, it's not conceptual knowledge that we're looking for. These things are simple and easy to say, but people forget them in their daily life, and they forget that the pleasures that they seek and they try to satisfy because they have desire, they still act as if the satisfaction of these desires is going to do it for them for the rest of time, and they forget that these things are are ephemeral, and they're going to have to repeat these things, whatever it takes to satisfy the desire, whether it's eating or breathing or anything else. That people don't really remember that these things are not permanent. So desire makes us glad, and then it makes us sad. So within desire itself, there's a moment of sadness and a moment of gladness. So the main truth, the two main truths that I've been talking about is that we all have desire. And another truth is we all experience suffering in connection with it. And so the secret that I'm talking about in the breath is what is called in Buddhism the Four Noble Truths. So we're talking about the first two of the Four Noble Truths. We're talking about the first one is suffering, that there is suffering. And the second noble truth is that the cause of suffering is desire or grasping or wanting or lust, whatever word that you use. It's going out and grasping. That's the action. Grasping is the cause of suffering. That's the first noble truth, suffering. And then the second, the cause of suffering, is grasping, wanting, desire. Okay. Now we go on, and we've been talking about this, and I mentioned impermanence or aging. Another thing that we can see in the breath is the aging process. Each breath has its lifespan. So we breathe in and it's born. It feels pretty good. But then it gets old, and then it gets tired, and it ages, and then it has to die. That breath has a lifespan, and has to be repeated endlessly from the very beginning of our life, our very first breath, to the very last breath we take. This repetition and impermanence goes on through our whole life. So the breath, by watching the breath, we see the truth of the impermanence. the impermanence that is connected with the desire, the fulfillment of desire and the suffering. Whatever we look for and grasp in the world, it's ephemeral. Well, it's like ephemeral. It's like trying to grasp water. We see it and we try to take it and it goes right through our fingers. My favorite simile of impermanence is you standing at the beach with your shoes off, and you're standing on the hard sand right where the water is lapping, coming maybe hitting your feet a little bit. And as you stand there, can you stand there long? No, because your feet start sinking into the sand. Has everybody had that experience? It's very eerie in a way. And your heels start going down faster. You know? And pretty soon you have to step out of the holes that your feet have made and get a new footing, right? And then how long can you stand in that new footing? Oh, you think, oh, now I found a secure place. No, it's not secure. The same thing happens. And you can make your way down the beach, and the same thing is going to happen over and over again. This is an idea of impermanence similar to seeing the breath repeated over and over. There is no secure footing, and we see in the breath something that is... This impermanence is also in every other thing in the world. Every other thing is impermanent. And because of impermanence, whatever we grasp is ultimately going to pass away in some way. We'll lose it, it will die, or we won't get it in any way. The end result of this impermanence is suffering, a kind of suffering, dissatisfaction, because what it was we wanted very much has slipped through our fingers again. And this happens over and over again. But how do we learn about it? What do? We have to learn about this. And the way we understand it is through, that's what meditation is for. This is how we learn a deep understanding of the truths, of simple truths. They're so simple nobody knows them. So, when something, whatever it is, occurs, doesn't last. It has a lifespan, it's born, has a lifespan, and it dies. It must be repeated. If you want that again, then you have to repeat it over and over again. Now, you might say, well, birth and death, are you only experience those one time, so they can't be. But you could say that a breath is born at the beginning with the inhale and then dies at the exhale. And what you can learn if you're open and you practice a long time, if you don't believe in rebirth, you may not, and that's up to you. But you may see that you have nothing to fear from passing away from death, because like a breath, your life will be repeated. Because, I'll tell you why, because there's always a residue of desire that's not going to pass away. Your body and mind may pass away. This particular personality may pass away, but it leaves a residue of desire in what's called kama, in the kama, that will not pass away until it's desired. And until it's satisfied, the desire must be satisfied. So it's like this hand reaching out, and it has to be satisfied and has to take a new birth. So one birth follows another, and what we're trying to do is to overcome this repetition of birth over and over, rebirth over and over, by awakening. So the two main lessons in breathing are: there is desire and there's suffering, and within them is impermanence. And those are the first two noble truths. Now the third noble truth is that the ending of suffering is caused by the ending of desire, or to say it the other way, the ending of desire. With the ending of desire, with the cessation of desire comes the cessation of suffering. The only way that suffering can finally end is with the complete ending, the cessation, the abolishing of desire. So that little experiment I was, this is the key to that little experiment I was trying to do. So you watch what it is, if you watch the breath for a while, and you're watching the breath without desire. Now this is a puzzle to me, as it might be to you, and because I don't generally feel a great desire when I'm letting the breath go. It's just coming and going, and I don't feel that desire unless I hold the breath. So this is something that Bhante G wrote that is still a little bit puzzling to me. But the idea in this is this shows you the truth of the Third Noble Truth. If you have desire in your breathing and you let it go, you will have a certain amount of what he calls durable pleasure that will last as long as you drop or let go of the desire and just breathe. And you'll feel that for quite a while. The first time I tried it, I was in definitely a different state. This is something you can try. I hope that everybody remembers it is simply to breathe. Step back. Don't control the breath. Step back. Be detached from the breath. And if there's any desire, drop it. If you sense any desire coming up, drop it. Okay? That is a kind of proof. Because you will have a feeling of peace, this is a kind of proof on a very small scale of the Third Noble Truth, that once you get rid of the desire, you'll get rid of suffering. Because you do have this peace. Now, never going to make it.
5 minutes.
Not in,
5 minutes.
5 minutes, well. Okay, the big thing is that we can have a right understanding. And right understanding is the first step on the Eightfold Noble Path, Noble Eightfold Path. Noble Eightfold Path is, if you're not familiar with Buddhism and so on, it's sort of the path we follow that leads to the final extinction of suffering. The first step is that we have to understand, truly understand, the Four Noble Truths. But to do that, we have to go through the whole Noble Eightfold Path to the very end and have a deep understanding. And we can only have that deep understanding when we go all the way through and we have insight. Because just saying it, I can say it now, but it's not deep, right? It's just words. Conceptual knowledge is never going to do it. So, but what we've been doing is we want to see, if we practice a long time, we may have a moment when there's a cessation in us, just, we don't try to do it, it just happens. There's a cessation of desire, suffering, and delusion. And during that time, we have a feeling of deep peace. There's no telling how long it may be, very, very short. But that kind of peace is a little taste of nibbana, the ultimate. When we awaken, when we fully awaken, and then we pass, well, we can feel nibbana if we awaken, even as we're living. But then when we pass away, we pass into nibbana, as the Buddha did, as what are called arhats, the fourth level of enlightenment. As they do when they pass away, they pass into nibbana. It has no suffering. So we've caught a glimpse of the first step of the Noble Eightfold Path. And I think that I'm going to have to stop there, because what I wanted to do was expand that into my favorite part of this talk, which was going through the Noble Eightfold Path, not step by step, but just let me just say one thing. One side is virtue. First we have wisdom, then we have virtue, and the other side is meditation. If we want a strong meditation, we have to have the strong virtuous side. The virtuous side, have you ever, do you know the five precepts? You know the five precepts, I have to say them, that is expressed as morality in a negative. That's why I like virtue better. But for each one of those and each kind of virtue, we have to practice the positive side. Like, in for instance, in right thought, we have the thought, it's called non-ill will. And you know what that's the second one of the right thoughts. Non-ill will is usually called metta or loving kindness. You see, not it's expressed as a negative, but we have to. This is very important. I know I must sound like a pedant or something, but this is important. Virtue means we practice the positive side. We practice loving kindness. We practice virtue, and then on the other side, there's a quotation in the suttas. I've got to say this: the Buddha says that one with virtue rides forth from his castle as a head anointed king, that's the highest, rides forth from his castle without fear, with his retinue, without fear of being attacked by his enemies. And I picture this king as wearing a noble the golden crown of wisdom, and wearing silver armor and a large silver shield that represent what? Virtue, which deflect the enemies, and the enemies are the five hindrances. I don't know if you know the five hindrances, but I don't want to get into another subject. The five hindrances is the subject all in its own. But the first two are the most important, and the first two we've talked about. The first one is grasping, wanting, desire, lust. The second one is hatred, ill will, aversion, pushing away. One is pulling like this, and the other is pushing away. Those are the first two hindrances. When we can get rid of those, the important thing in the virtue, we put them down. I can't think of the right word. We put down the hindrances temporarily, and then we can go from mindfulness meditation and continue the breath meditation, and we go into deep samadhi. And in the deep samadhi, which is deep stillness meditation, then we have the insights that lead to the understanding, which are wisdom. And therefore, then the king has the golden crown. So, I'm sorry. I had to say that. I tried to abbreviate the whole thing. Okay. Next time, maybe.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you for listening, and I hope it wasn't too confusing. So, this all right. Well, thank you.
That was very interesting. Please come back again, and we look forward to hearing the second half.
Well, I gave you a little.
Thank you very much.
Gave you a hint. All right. Thanks, everybody.